We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling. On the corner.
What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andreas Hale. Still self-quarantined, practicing social distancing from the world, being responsible. If you guys are listening to us, we're assuming you're doing the same. So we're here to entertain you for about the next hour. Today's show is all about boxing and mixed martial arts. We're combining them again on this Monday. But of course, we still got to start off with some of the social media world and what we did this weekend. Dre, the biggest thing, I mean, you put me onto it, and it was through our group chat. And that's DJ D Nice on Instagram. And I want to say you put me on around, what, he had 30,000 listeners? It jumped to 100,000 by the time it was all done. And it was all people were talking about.
Yeah, man. I mean, so I know cats have been DJing on IG Live for a while. But one is D Nice, who is not just a legendary DJ. He produced Self-Destruction. He rhymed, I think, at the 7th verse on that song. You know, my name is D Nice. I mean, the guy's been everywhere. But then, I mean, everybody, this was like everybody and your mama at this party, including the law. Everybody was in that bitch. And he was playing everything. I mean, the damn stream crashed a couple times. I mean, Michelle Obama was in there. I guess representatives for Joe Biden, I guess, wanted to pop in and say, hey, because I can't possibly believe that Joe Biden was actually in this shit.
Yo, you never know.
You never know, but I mean, for me, for my evening, it was perfect, man, to have D-Nice spinning and just having music. I mean, listen, I know a lot of people are going nuts. I've been looking at people in quarantine losing their minds after 3 days. This is my life. Like, I work from home, so I never leave the house, so this is normal for me. But it was good to see a bunch of people in one place just enjoying some vibes, man. And I mean, he was spinning classics. He was spinning everything. Missy was in there. Like, I saw Nia Long was in there. It was a virtual house party. It was like the dopest shit ever. And then after that, like 8 million people who never did a DJ on IG Live was like, come to mine. And I was like, all right, this is too much. But good for them, yes. Man. I mean, good for D-Nice. I mean, I think Miguel just did, he was playing some covers earlier. Like, it seems like everybody's trying to find a way to cope with being quarantined. And this is smart. And it's fun. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was like, me and my daughter were in my living room dancing last night. We were busting a move. We had a good time.
Yeah, I had it on. I threw it on the phone, put it on the speaker. I was actually playing games online. And people were like, what the hell is going on there? I was like, shut up. Listen to music. I was like, I'm going to learn. You guys going to learn today. Because he was spinning like some real old school shit. And, you know, it's a bunch of like 12-year-olds on Call of Duty Online and throwing it back to Halo 3 as well. So I was on there just crushing kids. And they were like, what are you listening to? I was like, it's grown folk music. Something you might never know about. Just talking trash. So no, it was dope. Like I said, it was a good set. I probably listened for about like 45 to an hour. It seems like it went 9 hours.
Yeah, he's spinning, I believe, for 7 hours straight, I think.
That's bonkers.
But he's spinning for a while. I got to ask you a question. When you play online, you talk to people?
Yeah, I got a headset. Yeah, of course.
Talk to anybody.
No, you gotta have a headset. You got to do call-outs. How do you know where people are coming from if you don't do call-outs?
Usually, see, I'm not a team player online because I don't like people.
Oh,
like,
okay.
What people really don't understand, when I talk about, like, I'm like a loner type, like, where I'm self-quarantined and this is no big deal to me, like, I don't like playing online with people I don't know. I don't like talking to people that I don't know. So when I play Call of Duty, like, I'll be on the team and I'll listen, but I won't say shit. Like, just how I play. When I play games, like, if I don't know you, I don't talk to you because there's people that just, I did it one time. Long time ago, I signed on. I was playing Call of Duty, and I just heard like mad racial slurs and wild shit. And I was like, nope, not for me. Can't do this because then I'll have to talk crazy to him back. That's a complete waste of time, especially when I'm playing at like 2 a.m. and stuff like that. I don't like talking to people. It just ain't my speed. So all this like social distancing is my life. So people are freaking out about it. And I'm like, this is my life. This is all I do.
I've been waiting for this time.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you guys to embrace it. Like, people are losing their minds. Like, this is what I do every day. I don't like people. Straight up. I just don't like people.
I just pictured the Bane speech, also because I watched this the other day, from The Dark Knight Rises. You're like, you guys have just merely adapted social distancing. I was born in it.
Yes. Yeah, that is me.
Molded by it.
Look. First, let me open this up.
Cheers. I got the claw in hand. Cheers.
Yes, indeed. But I'm just not, I don't know, man. Like, when you talk about playing and people ask you what your music is playing, like, I don't have my headphones on. I don't do all that. I can't. Like, I listen to my nephew play he's been grounded for like a year until he gets his grades up. But he was playing Fortnite and listening to him giggle with his friends, and then his friends be like saying wild shit to each other. And I was like, how do y'all listen to this shit? But if I'm playing with people I know, like, if I play with, like, you or somebody like that, I'll talk. But if it's people I don't know, I ain't talking. I don't fuck with
my pops. I know you have a headset. Yeah, I've seen a headset in your crib. Okay. I was about to say, yeah, like, you have one.
When I play with, like, people that I know, yeah, we communicate. If I play with people I don't know, fuck them. Like, my dad, my pops, when I go to his crib and he's, like, always playing, like, he used to play, like, SOCOM all the time. He plays, like, 2K. And it just looks so stupid. Like, I walk in and I'm, like, watching him just talk to people he doesn't know. Or, like, Red Dead Redemption 2. It's the most amazing thing because he plays it more than I did. Like, I'm a single-player guy. So most of the games that I play are all single-player games. And he always plays online. He doesn't fuck with single-player anything. Which is, like, the age thing is crazy because you would think that he would be that type that didn't play online. And yeah. I would be the one playing online. No, it's not the case. I play single-player everything. He doesn't. So he's telling me about his friends. I was like, excuse me? He's like, yeah, I got my boy. He's the one who skins all the things. And he sells us the pelts, and then we got a crew together to rob a bank. And I'm like, what? Like, go get some friends, Pop. But now I feel like the old man because I'm the one telling him this. Like, he's gotta
tell him, go outside, Pops.
Yeah, like they'll text each other, like, and they'll text each other about somebody's a snake in the crew, and then they'll shoot him down. Like, I watched this happen one time. I just went over his crew. And I was watching playing Red Dead, and it was like somebody's like stealing our stuff and not trading properly. And I was like, I'm listening to him, and he gets a text message, and he picks up the phone, and he calls his boy, and he mutes the microphone, and he's like, yeah, Dennis, we got to get him the fuck out of the group. Word. Tell the other guys. So they all text each other offline, ganged up on this dude and killed him. And I was like, that's impressive, but I was like, this is a lot. So all that to say, I don't really play. Like, I play online when I want to, but you won't catch me talking to y'all. Like, that's why I'm yesterday when Aaron had DM'd me, Aaron Ashley Simon, who's fucking dope. I love her. And she was just like, oh, we gotta play Call of Duty. I'm like, bet. I started to put my PSN on Twitter, and then I was like, nope, because a bunch of people are gonna want to talk to me, and I don't want to do all that. So if you if you game online and you can shut the fuck up, then you can, you know, send me your PSN. Otherwise, if you like talking, I ain't the one.
Yeah, I'm gonna put mine up probably today, like after we record this, just so I can play. It's the same on Xbox and PS4. So if you guys are gaming right now, hit me up, Ringside Kel on both. So if you guys want to play, one thing I did notice yesterday was, one, all that shit you mentioned, like all the slick comments, the racial comments, those are all still there. So I was kind of going back and forth with people, and then I realized, I was like, no, my like gamer tag is way too recognizable. I gotta chill. So like, if they're just talking crazy, I just chill out now. But yeah, I'm always like either gaming like one of my friends, like it has to be two of us. I'm not just going on there by myself and wrecking shop. But now I feel like everyone's self-quarantined, so it's like, all right, cool, we can crew up. I'm gonna play with Aaron. I got Call of Duty loading right now, so I had to like update.
Still, it's been like a day.
No, I got to do an update. Like, so I played for like 2 hours yesterday, and then I went on today, and someone was like, yo, you got to do this update for us to play cross platforms. You have to have all the updates. So I was like, oh, shit. All right. So I had to download like some other update. That's going right now. So I'll hop on, play with Aaron later, and just mad people. You look at all the boxers, they're playing. So Shakur plays all the time. I saw him in a crew with Terrence Crawford last week, and they were playing, going back and forth. Devin Haney was playing yesterday, so I have to get all their gamer tags and play as well. So I feel like that's how we're going to pass the time. It's like I've been transported back to 14-year-old me. Like, I'm playing video games. I'm drinking in the house. It's almost exactly like 14-year-old me.
Yep.
See, all over again.
See, yeah, it's so different for me. It's just no, like, from, and my only issue right now with like Call of Duty is I've only played it for like 20 minutes, and I've had it since like the week before it came out, because I play everything else. Like, I'm again single player, playing Force Awakens, I'm playing Assassin's Creed, I'm playing The Witcher 3. Like, none of those games are like online games I can play with people. I like to play games by myself. Like, when Final Fantasy drops, I will be immersed playing that shit all over again. So, sorry guys,
I am trash at Call of Duty. I haven't played Call of Duty in forever. I am trash. Yo, but I downloaded it on Xbox. Yeah, me too. I had to get it on Xbox because I'm just better on Xbox, because that's where I used to play it. Like, I only got a PlayStation to play MLB The Show, and then all the exclusive titles kind of wrangled me in, and I haven't touched my Xbox in like 3 years. So now that I'm like back on it, I was like, yo, fuck it, I got to get it on Xbox. So at least it was cross-platform. So don't worry. Give me like a week, 2 weeks. You guys can't badmouth me if you guys add me on, I mean, whatever system you guys are playing on. If you add me on Call of Duty and I'm trash, it's okay. Let me live through this. I'm going to get better. In a week's time, I'll be at the top of the leaderboards again. Yeah, so that's been pretty much the weekend. Oh, before we get past this DJ D Nice thing, you mentioned a lot of names that were there and listening to his set. Why was Stevie Wonder in this chat? Like, why was Stevie Wonder on IG Live? Why does Stevie Wonder have an Instagram?
Therein lies my problem. Like, when people are like, oh, he wants to listen to music. That's cool, because he's listening.
YouTube?
Like, Instagram wasn't created for the ears. It was created for the eyes. And to my recollection, Stevie has none. So it's like, I mean, he has eyes, but he doesn't have vision. So why does he have an Instagram? Who logged him in? How did he figure out how to log into IG Live, and how did he know that D Nice was spinning? There's a lot of fascinating shit going on here with Stevie Wonder.
Even if you can somehow tell the difference between apps on your phone, if they let him memorize where the apps are and then you just use, you know, the face recognition to get in, cool. I understand that. Maybe he can navigate an iPhone due to some technology for blind people that I'm not privy to. Even then, how do you then know D Nice is spinning? Know how to get to D Nice's page? And are in the comment section to the point of, are you leaving comments? Is there IG to talk feature? I have a lot of questions.
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Or is Stevie not blind? You know how many people say Stevie ain't blind?
I think there's somebody that, you know, holds his phone and does this, but it just seems weird, man. It just seems like, well, you know.
All day?
Why?
That's what hell of a job.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yo, I just, like, I run Stevie's phone. Like, okay, social media? No, I run his phone. It's like, what? Yeah, I'm, you know. So Stevie Wonder is on IG. It's a visual social media app. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, I'm done. Like, that's it. My night is made. Because Stevie, and we've had other hot takes on Stevie Wonder on this podcast. It was funny because we just, congrats, this is our first show after 5 years. We are now into year 6, I believe this would be. So we just passed the 5-year anniversary mark, year 6 of the Corner Podcast. And outside of the To Pimp a Butterfly hot take that everyone now knows about because we constantly bring it up, the other super hot take from those first 3 episodes was me saying I would not pay to watch Stevie Wonder in concert.
Yeah, you can't live that one down.
Because he's not doing anything besides sitting on the piano and singing. And I said I can just watch it on YouTube or listen to it on iTunes because it's the same thing. He's not dancing. He's not moving around. I guess I'm older now, right? What did I say that? I was 24 years old when I said that. 25. I'm a little older. So I'll backtrack a tiny bit on this statement, but it's not a concert I have to see. Like, I have to see Prince. I didn't see Prince. I was tight. MJ is like a concert I would have had to see. Like, now there's some people, it's like, yo, I probably have to go to that concert before I die. I've seen Jay several times, so I'm good on that. But there's other people where I'm like, I really got to see this before, you know, it's too late. Stevie's not on my list of people. Even though you give him amazing, amazing reviews.
I mean, dude. So when you go to a live show,
yeah,
you go for the music, right? To hear it live.
Ooh, and a mixture of the atmosphere. Because I've been to live shows where I don't know who's spinning what. Like, I've been to EDM festivals, and I don't know what's coming next. I don't know. I go for the DJ, and I go for the atmosphere. People wilding out. People aren't wilding out to Stevie.
So wait, okay.
Are they?
When you go, so somebody who goes to a EDM, like to see a DJ, right?
Yeah.
These people pay lots of money to see a DJ. What are they doing?
Correct.
Because they're not even playing music.
They're pressing buttons.
They're pressing
buttons. A button, right? Like 2 buttons. Yes.
Like Stevie plays instrument. He has a band. It's not just
but
him.
But the
like,
people around bring the energy, Dre. Everyone else is dancing. They're shuffling. They're partaking in other activities and taking stuff and wilding out, and I'm drinking, and it's like an energy. What's the energy at a Stevie show?
It's amazing. Do you not like music? What is wrong with you?
No, I love music, like, and I'm not knocking his music. I like his music.
But if you wanted to go see, like, you're going to see Prince because...
Oh, the energy at a Prince concert. And my energy is crazy. That's another thing. Like, I go to concerts, I sing along. You know, everyone's singing along to every word.
Is that what you're telling me?
No, I mean, no, personally, I don't, like, I know words, but I don't know, like, I know hooks. I don't know, like, the deep cuts as well as I should. You know, the verses, I do the, you know, maybe know every end of the word. Like, I'm a hype man on stage, but I don't know the exact
words. Basically, you're just not a Stevie Wonder fan.
No, I like I just don't, even that aside, I've been to concerts where I don't know lyrics. I don't know this person's words, but to every song. But it's hype. Like, the crowd is hype. People are dancing. People are wilding out. Like, I just went to we're at the Tyler Creator joint. I don't know none of that new album, but the energy was crazy. Yeah, the performance was good, and he's moving around, and he's jumping.
Wait. You're talking about Tyler, but do you go to R&B concerts?
No, you wouldn't count it. You wouldn't count it. I could say yes, but I've been to Chris Brown, Trey Songz, Weeknd. Like, it's not the same. You wouldn't count those as R&B concerts. They were, like, bigger venues. I wouldn't count those as R&B concerts, per se, you know? Like, they were, like, bigger venues and had theatrics and shit like that. It's like saying, yeah, I go to wrestling and I went to WrestleMania.
So you go for the concerts for the flippy shit. You go to concerts for the flippy shit.
I do. Like it's like my pro wrestling taste a lot of the time.
So not
I'm here for all the flippy music. Shit.
So not the music. Like the fact that Stevie Wonder
the music helps. So
do you care if people can sing? How about that?
Ooh.
Wow, for you to spend this long to answer this question? Oh my God.
That's tough because I saw Janae Aiko at South by Southwest one year and it completely fucking crushed me because it was Gambino into Janae Aiko into Wale. And her and Gambino did their song together. I think it was like Pink Toes. And whatever else she had on her album. And she could not sing at all that week. I've never seen her. I haven't seen her since. But she could not sing at all. And, you know, she just whispers on tracks and shit. And it was kind of off-putting. But I don't feel like she has good performance music anyway, though. So, no. If you can't sing, that's my example of someone who couldn't sing. And I was like, nah, this shit's kind of trash. And she ruined the vibes. It wasn't a vibe.
Really, we really need to get into combat sports, but...
Oh, yeah. We got nothing but time.
Would you see like a Luther Vandross concert?
No, I'm not watching Luther. I mean, there's not a Luther guy either, but no, like no.
So
I'm not
you don't like sing. So essentially, you just don't like singing. You don't like people who can sing.
No, I do. I don't know if I'm going to like an Elton John concert, Celine Dion. I think once like someone had like Celine Dion tickets for me. I was like,
yeah, Celine Dion is amazing live. What is wrong with you? You don't like
no, and I just don't see you don't it. Like you got to bring something else. I do, but can you sing and have flippy shit? I've been to a Beyonce concert, and I'm not a Beyonce fan, and she put on an incredible performance.
But you, because
she was great.
But you like the theatrics of it all. You don't care.
But she mixed in good singing.
Yeah, but if she didn't have the theatrics, you wouldn't have cared.
I mean, I don't want to see someone sit at a piano for 3 hours. No.
Who the hell's performing at a piano for 3 hours?
I don't know. What else does Stevie do? What else does Stevie do?
There is a band.
He gets up. Damn. He gets up and walks around. Is what you're telling me?
Dude,
or do they bring him instruments? There is a band.
There is a band. Like, what is wrong with you? When you see somebody perform and they have a band, like, aren't you there to enjoy the music live? Like, have you?
I do love a live band.
I'm sure you haven't. You haven't seen Earth, Wind, and Fire perform live, have you?
I have not seen. Does that seem like it's in my age bracket?
Doesn't need to be. It's out of my age bracket. But I know they can perform. But it's closer.
Yeah, no, I've seen shit like on YouTube. Like, I YouTube live concerts all the time, and like their performances are great. But that, again, Earth, Wind, and Fire to me, to divert even further away from our normal topic, is I grew up a lot listening to salsa music. And there's this salsa group called El Gran Combo. It's kind of like that Earth, Wind, and Fire of Puerto Ricans. But it's very similar music, and to me, those are like, it gives me like a rock band feel. So when I listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire and I saw those videos and me and the wife look at this shit for hours on end and go down rabbit holes on YouTube. And when I watch them perform and all, it's different. It's like watching Bootsy and Parliament. Like, I get like a rock band feel. Is that weird? Am I explaining it right? Like, they feel like rock stars to me. They're not a singular person on stage.
You're just not into the live music. You like theatrics. Okay.
Even they had theatrics, though. Earth, Wind, and Fire, to me, had theatrics. There's movement. There's feeling. There's vibing. People are dancing. I got it. I feel that.
Like, you don't
I don't know if Stevie does that.
You don't go to concerts to hear somebody live, like Luther Vandross live, or, like, even, like, a flow.
The closest I've done is Jay. The Jay solo concert where there's no theatrics, no band. No, nothing. It was a DJ and him on stage walking back and forth and rhyming lyrics. That's the closest I've been to it. And I know every lyric, so I was fine.
You're a wild one. I like to see people perform because the performance element, like how you sound live, is so different than how you sound recorded. Especially for like power ballads or people who can sing like Celine Dion. There's nothing like hearing them live. Stevie's one of those people that's...
Are you a person that gets the chills?
Yes.
I never understood that statement. Okay, I'm just wondering. People are like, yo, that their singing gave me chills. I'm like, I don't understand. I don't get that. I get chills, like, for big fights when we're ringside and, like, the title's on the line. I get fucking goosebumps.
But that's my point. You don't listen to singers, so how could you get chills?
I do listen to Sync. Now you've loved me. I just said I went to a Beyonce concert. Does that not count?
No, it doesn't. Here's why.
Because Chris Brown sung very well. You are not. He didn't lip sync.
Chris Brown is not a very good singer. So we can bury the hatchet right there. Chris Brown is okay. He's not a very good singer. Okay, I'm talking about singers. I'm not talking about like guys who
try to sing
through music. I'm talking about singers. Like, have you ever heard somebody? You've never heard somebody in church and it gives you chills?
Yo, I couldn't tell you last time I was in church.
You have to be at church. I'm just saying. You've never heard something like Marsha Ambrosius. Like, she can sing. Like, Jennifer Hudson. She can sing.
You know who I enjoy watching sing? I don't know. Jill Scott. Just up there belting. And I watch, like, some of the... Even though Erykah Badu is fucking crazy, I feel like Erykah sometimes gives me, like, a weird feeling. Not chills. I enjoy it. Jill Scott is probably my prime example of, like, she just sits up there and just fucking belts and sing. I would watch Jill Scott live. You know, hand movements on the microphone aside. Like, I would enjoy just her singing, I think, live. But I've never seen... I've never been in, like, just super lounge environment watching an R&B singer. Just real mood
that's
lighting
type shit.
That's
the best way to see him. Like, that's... Man, you just saw like you like the flippy shit in pro wrestling, like you like the actress. Like you don't care necessarily about the product that's coming out of their mouth. Everything else surrounding it is more important to you.
I do like lyrics. No, you're painting me in a very bad light.
We're not talking about lyrics. We're talking about
vocal range and capability.
Like the fact, like again, Stevie Wonder. Until you've seen him live. And then, of course, if you don't like the music, then what's the point? Like, what are you doing here? But to see Stevie live with a live band and to hear his voice live and to see his band perform, because his band performs. So to see all
that. It's been 5 years. I got to get Stevie tickets. This is the only way I'm going to settle it.
Yeah,
I'm a grown man now. I got a grown ear. I'm going to get the next Stevie tickets in my area. If it's in Vegas during like a fight weekend and we're, you know, over all this coronavirus shit, it's okay. We'll go to a Stevie concert. And I'll sit down and we'll watch Stevie.
I won't go.
We'll figure this out.
Why
not?
Because you and your wife can go. I'm not going to a Stevie
concert. We'll make it a double date. Why you can't go with me? I feel like that was a very condescending statement. I'll go to a Stevie concert. I ain't going with you and your ignorant ear.
I'll be looking at you the entire time, and that won't be fun.
With your ignorant ear. Like, if I don't pop during... I feel like this is so pro wrestling. But if I don't pop during, like, the crazy sequencing, the chain wrestling on the ground, you'll just be disgusted.
Yeah, like...
Like, if I only pop for the high spots and the dives, just judging me.
The transitions, the fact that Stevie does covers, the things that Stevie does. Like, Stevie, when he performs, he plays songs that he wrote for other people. Like, there is so much there that you will never hear on a CD. So
that's dope. I like that. I didn't know that. I think that's super dope to hear, you know, someone perform. What are those? Kind of like the sample tracks or whatever it is when you know they wrote it, but you never heard their voice on it. I know The Dream kind of does that sometimes where he'll sing the songs he wrote and he's not a great singer. But regardless, you know, he'll do that and be like, yo, I've heard of, who is that? I forgot his name. Excuse me. Definitely no name. From the 90s. Babyface doing the same. And you don't get to hear like that version of stuff, even though he wrote it. So that's dope. That adds another level of intrigue. But I don't know. I'm going to do it. All right. You're not going with me. I'll give you my recap. I'm going to find Stevie tickets. Yeah, and if he does an Instagram concert, I will tune in. Because now that he has Instagram, you never know. Damn shame. Before we get over this and into combat sports itself, one other thing. On IG Live, did you see Lil Boosie? Tell me you saw Boosie.
Are you talking about... You're absolutely talking about him paying $25 to get these girls to take these tops off, right?
50 if you're showing it all. But yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
God. Listen, there's only so much 50. Boosie I can take. After the whole Dwayne Wade situation with Boosie, like him talking about Dwayne Wade, I was done. And there's just certain people, man. It's like, I can't. And he's one of them. I saw that and I was like, really? Between that and your boy Jamal Murray, like, just wilding out on
Instagram. Yo, like, what is he thinking?
He's not.
Like, he's the face of a franchise.
Yeah. Well, you know. Some people just don't need social media. Like, fighters, athletes, entertainers. Like, Boosie doesn't need social media. But some people are entertained by this stuff.
To be fair, Boosie wasn't doing anything wild. He was just giving away $25, $50 at a pop. The people joining him and actually busting it open for a Boosie IG Live where mad people are watching, it's just a whole different level of woman right there.
Dude, that's bizarre. Like, $25 to take your top off?
$50? Yo, like, 50? Really? Yeah, like, come on. Really?
Have you no integrity? 20? Guess not.
No. No. They just want to be on IG Live with, you know, maybe getting... It's $25 and, what, 200 followers? 300 followers? Maybe an increase on the OnlyFans? Who knows? Everybody and their mama's got an OnlyFans now. Women are just, like, stuck in the house. I've seen, and this is no exaggeration, 15 to 20 people on my Facebook page advertise new OnlyFans in the past 2 days. And a lot of Facebook people are, like, people I went to high school with that you wouldn't know 10 years from now are escorts. But, you know, shit happens. That being said, yeah, I've seen, like, 15 to 20 OnlyFans pop up. I'm like, who's paying for this?
Somebody is.
They make it more than $25. But they're just... But not when it leaks for free. Wink, wink.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, just... I don't know. It's a wild world in IG. So I was just wondering if USC Boosie... But yeah, Jamal Murray is even crazier than that. He's wilding. Like,
yeah,
he got way too much money for that.
Sit down. Like, talking about you.
It's alive. Like... So, oh, people with the dumbest excuses. Yeah, man. All right. You know what we're going to do? We're almost half an hour into this show. We're going to take a quick break, pay the bills. When we come back, diving right back into combat sports. You guys stay right there. All right, we'll get back to the show in a second. But first, we want to tell you, with no current NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on. Or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack, all open 24 hours a day and all online, including their $750,000 poker series.
So if you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit their website and join today to receive 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. Bet online, your online wagering experts.
All right, everybody, just that quick, we are back and finally getting to talking combat sports, boxing and MMA. Hold on, I had to get another White Claw during our break, so second claw for this one. Dre, to start off, let me not drink right now, I don't want to get rowdy. It was kind of a weird week in boxing, only because there was a lot of beefs to talk about, a lot of rumors, but... One thing in kind of the cycle, the news cycle, especially on social media, was the passing of Roger Mayweather, Floyd's uncle. And with that, second loss for Floyd, we talked about on last week's episode. We talked about him losing one of the mothers of his children. And then now, just a couple days later, I believe it was the same day as the funeral for Josie, Roger Mayweather passed away. Roger trained Floyd when his dad was in prison. Like, this was, you know, a key pivotal person in Floyd's career and why he was so successful. And then Roger himself had a long, just storied career himself before ever becoming a trainer. So it's kind of like a pivotal person in boxing was lost. I feel like it didn't get the buzz it deserved, though.
No, it didn't. I mean, yeah, one, it's absolutely unfortunate. I mean, the last time I saw Roger, I was at Mayweather's gym. It had to be like October. And there was really nobody there. I can't even remember why I was there. But I saw Roger walk in, and he needed help walking in. He was just in really bad shape. And it was only, you knew it was only a matter of time. And I mean, the Mayweather family has done a great job just keeping his condition under wraps. Floyd would talk about him, say he's in bad shape. But until you saw what Roger looked like, you didn't really understand how bad a shape he was in. So when the passing did happen, it wasn't, I guess it wasn't completely unexpected. I'm sure, you know, his health had been failing him for quite some time. But you're right in the sense that this whole, the coronavirus did overshadow anything with Josie Harris and Roger Mayweather. And as much as, you know, you may not like Floyd Mayweather the person, this is really a mighty blow to him. Because, yeah, like you said, Roger was there. I mean, you know, he held the mitts. He was the trainer. I mean, he was, you know, it's kind of like Floyd's spirit animal in the corner. Like, Roger was always there. And the fact that he's gone, it's tough because aside from being a trainer, he was a great fighter. He was the Black Mamba before Kobe Bryant.
You know, before Kobe.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. They look at him as just a trainer, but, you know, he's been around. Like, Roger's been here. So his loss, it sucks for the sport of boxing, and he gave us great things. Like, you don't know shit about boxing. Roger gave us that, man, and it's just, it sucks that he's gone. You know, I don't know what the Mayweather family's dealing with at this point, because it's a lot. It's a lot of weight, because it's not just Floyd, it's the entire family. You know, the kids, they know Roger. You know, Leonard Ellerbe, he knows Roger. He's been there with Roger almost since day one of Floyd's pro career. So anybody that's been affected by it, it sucks. Yeah, I wish they would have got more press, but we've been bogged down by so much coronavirus stuff is that a lot of things just kind of get swept under the rug.
No, definitely. It's just, it's weird because you mentioned like seeing him. I haven't seen him. It has to be a while. I mean, before I left Vegas, I was in the Mayweather gym for something or another. So it had to be like last June, last July. And I remember there was like reports he went missing for a couple of days. And then he was found. So like that was like the first real indication where I was like, yo, there is he okay? Because you see that a lot in news. And I remember reporting that when I was at the news station with people, not only with dementia, just older people when they just lose track and they think they can do the same things they did when they were younger, try to take a bus, try to go somewhere by themselves and then end up legit lost for days. I was like, damn, like, is he really in that condition, that shape? And then, you know, learning that his health wasn't the greatest and this is what led to it. So it was, yeah, man, it was a sad story to play out, but I guess it wasn't unexpected. That doesn't make it any less difficult. And it was nice to see everyone coming out and sending their best wishes to Floyd and to the Mayweather family. There's been, I mean, ongoing cool tributes to him, especially on the Mayweather Promotions page. Some photos and videos I hadn't seen before, so that was really cool. I tried to do a good amount of stuff on ringside to bring attention to it. So truly, I mean, in person, in my lifetime, like covering combat sports, which is only like, what, a decade now? But in person, I have never seen anyone on the mitts like him. And so much of that is the mitt guy, right? Like, people look at him and be like, wow, that boxer is so fast, or look at his hand. A lot is dependent on what the hell the guy with the mitts can do. And Roger still had it. Like, he still had the hand speed and quickness at his age that it looked like he would have had while boxing. And that's what made him so special. He was such a special boxer that when he transitioned, like the hand speed, everything continued. So a lot of Floyd's quickness, defensive skills, you look at Roger sticking out the hand. So Floyd, you know, to the shoulder, working the shoulder roll, a lot of that is having to dodge his uncle. Like, yo, if I could dodge this guy and practice against him on the mitts, oh, this shit is cake in the fight.
Yeah.
Because he was still that quick. I've never seen anyone on the mitts like him.
No, completely amazing. One interaction that I had with Roger, I think, well, one of my first interactions actually was the, it was either the, no, it wasn't the Hatton fight. It might have been the Marquez fight. And I was in, you know, obviously I was in Vegas. I was actually working at BET at the time, so I flew home for the fight. It was a Marquez fight. And we were talking, so we, you know, they have the trainer roundtables, and we had the trainer roundtable, and It was Nacho on one table and Roger on the other. And what ended up happening is we stopped talking about Floyd's strategy. And me and Roger just started having this conversation about Muhammad Ali. And there was a point where Roger almost said that, you know, he was like, you guys talk about Ali so great. There's a lot of things that Ali didn't do. And like the writer's like, what? And there's like six of them. And me and Roger started talking because he was like, boy, what you know about Ali? Because obviously I'm like the younger dude. So I was like, I'll tell you what Ali didn't do. And he's like, well, what? And I was like, Muhammad Ali never went to the body. And Roger sat there with it. He's like, see, I tell y'all, you don't know shit about that. But he knows shit about boxing. Because it was one thing, like, if you studied Ali, Ali never went to the body. If you watch all of his fights, he never went to the body. And that was, people looked at it as a cardinal sin, but Roger was like, he was so good, he never had to, and nobody ever noticed. And it was just like, it was just one of those conversations we had, then we had like a sidebar. But it was like my first memory about Roger, because I was like, talking, because he was basically just crushing boxing writers for not knowing the sport. And it was that interaction between me and him where it was just like, we were cool after that. That was my first interaction with Roger, and from that point, it was cool. And for like a year, he was always referring to me as the guy that knew Ali didn't go to the body. He was like, you should listen to him. He knows Ali didn't go to the body. He's like, you write what you know, but you don't know shit about boxing because you would know that Ali didn't go to the body. And it was crazy, but that was my little Roger Mayweather story. And, you know, he knew the sport. He was not a trainer who didn't know the sport. He knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, I thought of you and your Ali never went to the body comment today because I had to post on this day of Ali knocking out Foley. It was right before he got stripped. That was on the day. So he got stripped next month, like in 3 weeks after. But Foley hit him with a body shot. It's the first time I watched the entire fight because, you know, you see highlights and all this stuff. So now that I have access to the entire Ali archives, anytime I post one of these things, I'm like, yo, fuck it. I'm on the clock, so they're paying me for it. I might as well watch the fight. So I watched the fight. Ali ate a body shot in like the fourth or fifth round. I thought it was over. Oh, and it was clean to the body. And then afterwards, like in the post-fight interview, he was like, I forgot who was interviewing him, but like, were you hurt? He was like, he stung me to the body, but I was never hurt. I was like, shit, stop lying. That body shot was crazy because Ali fought so up and down. I don't know why people really didn't hit him in the body. I guess you couldn't catch him. That's one thing Ali talked about in that fight, too. He was like, I fought this fight more flat-footed than any fight I've ever fought before. And it showed he ate that body shot, and I just thought he couldn't move after that. I was like, yo, anyone else goes down off of this shit. So he could take a hit to the body. He didn't throw any hits to the body, but ooh, he ate a mean one.
When people talk about, I mean, I guess we're rolling kind of sports talk, but when people talk about, like, Muhammad Ali, there's been this weird pattern of things that I've been seeing happening on social media lately. And it's been discrediting how good fighters are because you forget what made them great because it wasn't just always offensive. Like, when you talk about Ali, people forget that Ali had probably one of the greatest chins in boxing history. Like, just the man could take punishment. And, like, nobody's business. Like, him getting up from the Frazier knockout, I talk about that all the time. It's like, Frazier was destroying people with that left hook, and Ali just got up. But you look at, like, Ken Norton broke his jaw in, like, the second round. Zola Frosta fight, that body shot. Like, Ali took punishment. Like, guys like Julio Cesar Chavez, people forget that Chavez, if you ever watch Chavez fight, what made him great is he wasn't a guy who was exceptionally fast or he was skilled, but he wasn't athletic. His ability to take two or three punches and give you back one that was way harder than those two or three that you threw was what made Julio Cesar Chavez special. And those things are always forgotten with a lot of these fighters. Who else? Like, we talk like Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield was a fucking cruiserweight and went up to heavyweight and was like, yeah, his body transformed. When he fought Tyson the first time, everybody looked at Holyfield like, holy shit, he got into shape. But Holyfield had a hell of a chin. You know, the chins are so underrated in the heavyweight division. Like, that, I think that's what makes Tyson Fury.
That's tough, though. Like, I saw a Holyfield fight yesterday, again, because I had to post on this day. By far, the best part of my job is getting paid to watch fights. But Holyfield got dropped clean by Bo. Clean. Yeah. That was on this day yesterday when he lost to Bo. On this day, or maybe it was part of, like, something I was posting. Just, it wasn't even on this day. It was a random post. But he dropped Bo in the fourth or the fifth of their first fight. And then, next thing you know, Bo knocks his ass out.
Yeah, I mean, Riddick Bowe is probably one of the most underrated heavyweights of all time.
Yo, you see that conversation going around on Twitter about underrated heavyweights?
No, who do they
have? It was the number one underrated heavyweight. I think I saw you comment. It was between Max and Dan started off. Was David Tua.
I never thought David Tua was underrated. I thought
he never won a heavyweight championship and people kind of shit on him for it. Yeah. Was the argument.
Well, yeah, because, see, it's the Jordan rule, right? Like, Michael Jordan denied guys like Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing. Unless your name was Akeem Olajuwon, you weren't getting a ring when Jordan was playing. When Jordan was really in his heyday, because prior to that, when Jordan was losing, it was to the Bad Boy Pistons or the Showtime Lakers. Like, everybody in the 90s was ruined because of Michael Jordan. Klitschko ruined a lot of heavyweights. There were guys that were like Samuel Peter and Chris Bird, who was a champion for a hot second, and David Tua. The problem with David Tua was he had this incredible power, but he was tiny. He was a little guy. So when you put him up against guys like a Lennox Lewis or a Vladimir Klitschko or a Vitaly Klitschko, there was nothing you could do. He was just too small. So I never thought he was underrated. A guy that I always wanted to see really blossom before he fucking went to jail was Ike Biabuche. A lot of people don't remember. See,
that's what Max picked as his most underrated heavyweight boxer.
If anybody's got a chance to see Ike Biabuche fight before he went to jail, that man was a murderer. It was scary. He fought Chris Bird and he hit Chris Bird so hard I just swore the Tweety Birds was flying over his head. Like Chris Bird liked to have died when Biabuche was smoking people. He was fast, he was stocky, he was strong, he could take a punch. Then he went to prison and we really never got to see him how good he really was. But back to what I was saying is like you look at heavyweights, yeah, like Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield, but what makes a lot of great fighters is their chin. It's not their offensive. Meldrick Taylor fought Julio Cesar Chavez. Meldrick Taylor was beating the shit out of Chavez for 9 rounds. But Chavez would take 3, give back 1. Take 3, give back 1. And then in like the 9th round, the whole fight changed. Taylor was too much Philly in him. So he tried to stay in the pocket and keep dishing out punishment. But he couldn't hurt Chavez. So Chavez, if you ever watch that fight, it's one of those fights that if you're self-quarantined, go watch that fight immediately. Chavez, he's not even lumped up. When they go into the 12th round, because if you're scoring the fight, Taylor is probably winning 7-2, maybe, going into the 10th round. But then you look at their faces, you're like, how? It's impossible, because Meldrick Taylor looks like he's been hit by a bus. But he was winning the fight. And then he got knocked out in the 12th round with 2 seconds left. In a fight, and it changed his entire career, that one fight. But guys who can take punishment, like, you could be as offensive as you want. Like, defense wins championships. Like, if Tyson Fury didn't have the chin that Tyson Fury has, he wouldn't have beat Deontay Wilder.
No.
He wouldn't have had the balls to go in with the strategy he did in the rematch, to just walk him down. He wouldn't have got up in the first fight.
Yeah, he trusted his chin enough. After knowing what he knew from the first fight, saying, yo, I took his best shot and I got up. Like, so what? Now just do it again. Like, except this time he was like, I'm going to bring it to him.
Like, defense is just so important. And so, circling, bringing all this back around to Roger and Floyd, like, Roger taught Floyd, like, Roger and Floyd Sr. taught Floyd what he needed to know. Like, the shoulder roll was something that Floyd inherited. It wasn't something that he learned. Like, I watched guys like Andre Berto and Adrian Broner try to deploy the shoulder roll. If you haven't been doing it since you were 4 years old, you ain't doing it right. And that was what Floyd had at a very young age. And when Floyd's, like, people always thought, well, Floyd's hands went brittle, and that's why he went to the shoulder roll. No, it wasn't, he didn't go to it. He always had it. But then he recognized, like, there's really no point in me getting hit. I just need to win fights. And, yes, his hands were terrible. Like, those few years, he couldn't hit anything. Like, I remember going to the gym and seeing him getting his hands wrapped. Like, Rafael Garcia was saving his hands because they were a mess. But it was all defense. All defense. Like, you look at Hagler versus Hearns. That fight was all offense, and we loved it to death. But there was just no way that Tommy Hearns could keep that shit up because he just didn't really have any defense. His defense was his offense. So, Roger Mayweather, great defensive fighter. Like, he gave everything to his nephew that he didn't have because his nephew just automatically had athletic ability. But then he gave him that. He helped him build that ring IQ. Did you see the videos floating around of Floyd Mayweather fighting Marcos Maidana? I think the second fight when Floyd does a. If anybody knows, like Floyd does a, he does a pull straight right. When somebody like lunges at him with a left, he'll pull back and fire the straight right, and he'll duck out of the way. It's like a vintage Floyd move. Floyd's fighting Maidana, and Maidana's lunging with a left hook. Floyd pulls back and gets ready to throw the right, but he, in a split second, he recognizes that Maidana's coming back with a left over the top, and Floyd pulls back on his own punch, and Maidana misses clean. Fighters can't do that shit. Like, he's in mid, because, like, a lot of fighters go into a mode, like 1-2-3 and a 1-2 and a hook uppercut or, you know, left hook left to the body, and they stay in that mode and they can't disrupt it. It's like a combo. Like
it's muscle memory. Yeah, it's muscle memory. You can't stop in the middle of it.
But Floyd can. And if you find this clip, it's Floyd in the middle of doing what he does best, the pull straight right, where he pulls, realizes that Maidana's getting ready to throw, because he's getting ready to court that right hand, but he's like, oh shit, if I let this hand go, I'm going to get hit with Maidana's other hook that's coming. And he pulls the second one back and ducks his head out of the way. It's unbelievable shit. Like,
people, he was fighting in the Matrix.
He was all the time.
Yeah,
all the time. And with Roger there, like the pad work, it wasn't all for show. It was reflex shit. It was muscle memory shit. Just unbelievable, man.
He saw every combination, arguably, you can see in boxing. Over and over. And again, that comes from having people like his father, his uncle, his... Man, I was going through Roger's stuff and seeing Roger versus Chavez, and you, like, Roger fought some of the best himself.
Oh yeah, Leonard.
So Floyd, like, Roger's like, yo, this is what I saw, this is what, you know, made me have trouble. And he's showing Floyd this from the age of 4. Roger saw this at the age of what, 30, and had to prepare. Floyd saw all these traps, all these counters, all this stuff from like the age of 4. You can't compete with that.
No, man. It's pretty impossible.
It's a 10,000 hour rule, right? Like, 10,000 hours to be a master at your craft. Floyd had 100,000 hours, and before it was even time to go pro.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I liken Floyd to somebody like a Biggie or a Jay-Z in this sense, is that Biggie and Jay-Z, there was a time where, like, you know what? I'm not going to write my rhymes anymore. I just memorize them, and I spit them. And I go into the booths and I spit them. And then everybody goes, you know what? I'm not going to write my rhymes anymore. And then I listen and I go, you know what? You should probably write your fucking rhymes. And with Floyd, Floyd says, I don't watch tape. And I don't necessarily believe him 100%, but I know he doesn't watch a ton of tape. Because what he does is he doesn't necessarily game plan when he goes into a fight. He goes off of, like, with Jay-Z and Biggie, when they listen to an instrumental, they go off what the instrumental is giving them, and they give it back. And Floyd goes off of the energy that his opponent is giving in the ring, and he adjusts accordingly. And there's no game plan for that. And other fighters, like, try to do the shoulder roll, or other fighters are like, I don't watch tape. You should watch tape. You're not Floyd Mayweather. There's something special about him. Because at a certain point in Floyd's career, his, like, you know, Roger wasn't in his corner necessarily giving him tips. He was just there being motivation, because Floyd was training himself at a certain point. Like, he would recognize what was going on in the ring, download that data, and then use it. That's why he won all his fights. But all these guys, like, I don't watch tape, or I don't write my raps. Go write your raps. Go watch a fight, because you're not as good as Floyd, and you never will be.
And talking about that, before we move on to the next little tidbit in boxing, I went back and watched Pernell Whitaker, who I thought was arguably the best defensive boxer I've ever seen. I've been watching more of his fights because the job allows me to. I'm starting to think Floyd might be a better defensive boxer, which then becomes, is Floyd the best defensive boxer I've ever seen? Because even the thing with Sweepy is he went up in competition, or maybe, I don't want to say people caught up to him. I don't know. He was, what, 1, 2, or 3 pound for pound for like 5 years, though. But towards like the later ends, and when he lost allegedly to Cesar Chavez, but even like that De La Hoya fight, like, you look at these, there were moments where he was getting caught. They could trap him, they could make him fight their fight, And then he'd shake it off and go back to doing his thing. I never saw that from Floyd. No one ever imposed their will on Floyd.
Here's the hard part about Floyd. And this is what ends up getting taken away from what a lot of what Floyd did in his career. So, Pernell Whitaker didn't lose a fight until he lost to Jose Luis Ramirez, which was like a highly disputed split decision. I remember watching that fight and going, well, how the fuck did he lose? The draw against Chavez was one that a lot of people thought he won. But prior to that, like, Pernell fought everybody. Floyd is kind of almost a victim of his own business making, like business decisions, because, you know, people will say he ducked certain fighters. It may not have been the money thing. So it's like we didn't get to see him fight Margarito when Margarito was scary. And this is like before, way before Cotto. This is when Floyd left Top Rank. Or we didn't get to see him, and depending on who you ask, it's Shane's fault. We didn't see him fight Shane Mosley when Shane Mosley was peaked. It was promotional shit, whatever. So we didn't get to see Floyd against a lot of those guys to really gauge it, whereas we saw Pernell Whitaker against a Julio Cesar Chavez. We saw Pernell Whitaker against a De La Hoya who was on the upswing. Yeah. And Whitaker was on the downside.
But Floyd beat a Canelo on the upswing. It, to me, that was the same position.
Well, no, it's different. That's
Pernell
different.
Fighting De La Hoya that's is different. The same exact time
no,
as Canelo coming up to Floyd.
No. De La Hoya was champion. Like, De La Hoya was running the circuit on people. Like, it wasn't like Canelo's youth.
Canelo was two fights away from dominating boxing.
No. Oscar De La Hoya was an Olympic gold medalist with a highly decorated amateur career and came into the sport. So he was, there was like full, like, a Mexican amateur, like in Mexico, the reason why their records are like 73-0 is because they really truly fight cab drivers for like the first 20 fights. So De La Hoya was seasoned when he fought Whitaker. Canelo wasn't necessarily. Like, I think maybe three or four fights prior to fighting Mayweather, Canelo was fighting like five times a year. And he got buzzed big time by Cotto.
He beat Mosley before then.
Yeah, but Mosley was kind of, you know.
I'm just saying. Like, he had fought Mosley.
De La Hoya was at his peak. Like, Canelo hadn't reached that yet.
No, clearly. I don't know when Canelo's peak is. Canelo's How about that? I still don't know. Is he just in his peak?
I mean, he's just now hitting his prime. Physical so, prime. But I think he...
I don't even know when his peak is then.
In my opinion, Canelo's peak really took place after the Lara fight. Like, the Mayweather fight was a boxing lesson. And he learned things
How do
about,
you say that? I thought he lost to Triple G. That can't be his peak. Because I think he watches Triple G now.
Well, because Triple G is older. That's why. You wouldn't say that Triple G was 4 years younger.
I think today, Canelo against prime Triple G probably still scores the knockout. Because today's Canelo's defensively... Defensively now, he's better than he was after that Lara fight. His head movement, his feet are still almost as slow. His head movement's incredible now.
But he hasn't, like, again, I mean, you've said this as
it's
well.
Tough.
You thought he lost both fights to Triple G, right?
I thought it was a loss and a draw, correct.
Okay. So you didn't think he won either of them. So if it was prime Triple G against this Canelo, because...
He has a better shot now.
I don't think Canelo's changed that much. I think the Lara fight taught him smart aggression because a lot of people thought he lost the Lara fight. I think he's learned a lot of things. Like, guys like Kovalev are teaching him nothing. He's just too good for them. Daniel Jacobs was a tough fight, much tougher than the Kovalev fight. The Kovalev fight was Canelo basically saying, you know what? I'm going to get you, and I'm going to give rounds away. Because if anybody remembers, a lot of people had Canelo losing that fight before he was getting knocked out. And not because Kovalev was a better fighter. It's because Canelo was headhunting the entire fight. So there was nothing to learn there. Like, Canelo knew what he came to do. Against somebody like Lara, that was a difficult fight. Yeah, he was fighting somebody who was elusive, that moved around a lot. It was like a bigger, not necessarily as good, and definitely not as offensive-minded Floyd Mayweather. And I feel like that was really the turning point for Canelo because then, like, he fought like Miguel Cotto, but he was just too goddamn big for Miguel Cotto. Just huge.
Yeah.
He was a giant. But I think at that point, he had started to peak physically in terms of skill set, understanding boxing, and his ring IQ. Between, like, the Lara and Mayweather fights did that for him. He was who he was against Triple G, and it was a tough-ass fight. But now Triple G's clearly on the downside of his career. He's 37. So, yeah, of course you're going to think he's going to watch him now. But what if Triple G beats him? And people say this sounds ridiculous, but, dude,
Triple G has to knock him out to beat him.
Going into the fourth fight with Manny Pacquiao, Juan Manuel Marquez was not the favorite to win that fight.
God, no. No, people didn't think he had a chance. I remember people wondering why there was a fourth fight. And I think we already had this podcast. But I remember you and a lot of other people saying, like, yo, he arguably won those first two fights. That's why we have a fourth fight.
Three. He won.
I thought he lost three.
The third fight, Marquez clearly won. The first one was a draw.
If we're keeping it funky, he might have won the second one. I think I'd give the third to Pacquiao. Or was Pacquiao the second and Marquez the third?
The third, I was there. The third fight is when everybody booed that decision. They thought Marquez won that fight.
Okay.
The third fight was the fight backwards. The third fight was the fight when Manny was really dealing with family issues and he just wasn't himself going to that fight. And Marquez was countering the shit out of him, but Manny ended up winning the decision. Mm. But going to that fourth fight, a lot of people were like, the only way granted, to this day, a lot of us look at Marquez like, man, he was on some shit because he was huge going to that fight.
But, he was super shredder going into that fight.
Yeah. But the thing about Triple G is, I know this just by talking to his camp. Triple G just hasn't been motivated. I don't know. Like, 37, yes, he is old. Yes, I do think Canelo's a favorite going into the rematch. But I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility because people looked at the Derevchenko fight and was like, Triple G's washed. One, Derevchenko's really good and people don't give him credit for that. Two, I know Triple G wasn't motivated for that fight. He ain't motivated for shit unless Canelo. That's the only fight he wants. He's just going through the motions. All
right. So, perfect transition. There's rumors of this trilogy pretty much being locked up already. You know, coronavirus aside, that Canelo to sign on for his contract against, who is he fighting next? Billy Joe Saunders?
Yeah, that's what was supposed to be announced, but coronavirus messed that all up.
Yeah, so don't know when it's going to happen, but, you know, the ink was almost dry on him fighting Billy Joe Saunders. Cool. But the rumors are that to get that fight signed, sealed, and delivered from you guys over at The Zone, the agreement was you would then turn around and fight Triple G. So we ain't giving you this if you ain't giving us that. And to me, I feel like it's weird, right? Because does this signal, you know, rumors aside, let's just assume that, okay, cool, he's going to fight Triple G again. Does this signal that he's getting Triple G at 168? Because then he's really winning.
Probably. I mean, without
160 after this makes no sense. Yeah, we'll just keep it speculation.
Yeah, he's not going to 160. Like, unless there is something that nobody knows about. Like, once he fought at 75, I said it after he fought Kovalev without any inside information. And I say this because, listen, even though I work at his own, Canelo's camp is one of the most guarded things I've ever seen in my life. It's like Fort Knox. You can't get shit out of them. And But
Oscar barely knows what's going on.
Oscar doesn't know what's going on. It's not even barely. He has no idea. But Canelo, once he hit 175, this just for him to go back to 60 is just ridiculous. Because for what? That was the biggest thing. For what? To fight Triple G? In his mind, he already beat him twice. One in a draw. He thinks he won both of them. So he's not interested.
Let's be real. It's easier to clear out 68 than it is 60. Right?
I don't even think it's that.
Who's at 68?
Canelo likes the challenge. Because Canelo, 68 is Caleb Plant, David Benavidez, Callum Smith, and I'm missing somebody. Who am I missing?
Billy Joe Saunders.
Oh, yeah, Saunders. Like that.
Those are the four champions. Benavidez and... The good thing, Benavidez and Caleb Plant are going to cancel each other out sooner or later. Because they're going to have a unification before Triple G ever has a chance. Because you don't really want to fight both of them. Those are two tough-ass fights. You're high on Benavidez.
I'm really high on Benavidez, and people forget Benavidez.
I really like Caleb Plant.
Yeah, I'm high on Caleb
Plant. Last fight excluded. Like, he sleepwalked through a little bit of his last fight and then turned it up.
Yeah, I mean, Benavidez is 22, 23. Like, people forget how young David Benavidez is. But what I'm saying is, Canelo at 68, there are more challenges at 68 for him than at 60 right now. The only real challenge for him at 60 is Triple G, and he's not interested in that. So once he went to 75, it was clear, like, he's going to go to 68 and try to definitively win a title there, because the WBA regular title you beat Rocky Fielding for, it's an alphabet title, really. It doesn't mean shit. WBA and their strange-ass distinction. So he wants a real he wants a real title at 68. And that's what the Saunders fight is. If he gets that, or whatever it is, the Triple G fight, there's just no way it happens at 60. He's not interested. I think maybe a catchweight. If there's no belt involved, if Canelo doesn't fight Saunders, maybe he fights him at a catchweight. I doubt it, though. Canelo has so much leverage heading into this fight, and knowing that it's the only thing that Triple G wants, he's just going to, it might be a...
Could make him go, right?
He'll do anything.
My first thing. It's like he makes him jump to 68, and that's the difference of the first two fights, of him actually getting him out of here.
Yeah. So this is all Canelo's doing, and I can't see this going any way where Triple G has any kind of leverage for this fight. So if this fight is going to happen, once this coronavirus thing subsides, we have no idea when that is. If Canelo has a fight before, like, Triple G is supposed to have a mandatory. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore.
Feel like that'll continue. As long as it doesn't go past July, I feel like we're in line for maybe those two. That's another thing. It's going to be moved off of Cinco de Mayo. It's going to be moved off of Mexican Independence.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, already it's a wrap. Cinco de Mayo's not happening, so you got to push everything back. So maybe you get July, November? There's a shit ton of stuff lined up for that time.
We're about to have an ultimate scramble. Like, once boxing is back in business, like, people's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna have fights. Yeah, but you got to book venues, you got to have dates, you have to work with the networks all over again. Like, what we're dealing with in combat sports is unprecedented, because it's not like we're missing one or two fights. We're missing a whole spring and part of summer of guys who were supposed to fight. Now we're gonna head in. I mean, dude, you're supposed to have Wilder Fury 3. Like, when is that gonna happen? There's so many things, and you have to book venues, and obviously everybody wants to fight in Vegas, but between the Garden, the Forum, well, not the Forum, the Garden, Staples, and MGM, T-Mobile, or Mandalay Bay as being the main locations for, like, the big, big fights, how the hell are you going to book all these fights? Because then you still got basketball, football, all this other shit going on. It's going to be hard. But I think if they do Canelo Triple G, I think they try to do it in September, because they know what it is. But I think they also look at it as, like, if Canelo Triple G fight is going to be a big fight, no, they can fight on Monday afternoon and people will watch that fight. So I'm sure they'll figure it out.
It's cold-blooded. On Monday afternoon, no one will watch it. Yeah, man, so we'll see. That's pretty much boxing. MMA, a couple of things to touch on. And the biggest thing, though, you know, to kind of bring the show to a close is Dana White is still trying to get this Ferguson-Khabib matchup to go through. According to him, it's going down by hook or by crook in April, to the point where this past week he called out MMA media and said, quote unquote, and I mean, I don't know if you feel you're personally involved in this, but I am now removed from that space. He said, MMA media are wimps. Quote by Dana White, MMA media are wimps. I don't feel like a wimp. Like, I know some other people that probably aren't wimps. So it's like, all right, Dana, cool beans. He's pulling the same old Dana White card. And right now, I'm not exactly sure why. That's the key of it. It's just like, Dana, why attack the media? It seems very Trump-ish. At this moment, it's an unnecessary call out. If you want to do your fights, do your fights. If you're going to pull back out, pull back out. The reason this isn't happening isn't because of the media. So why take an unnecessary swipe when you don't have to?
I don't understand this. Coronavirus is a real thing. And for MMA media members to ask Dana White, are you concerned about this? Doesn't make MMA media wimpy. It makes people concerned. And if concern equates to being wimpy, yeah, you're just like your boy Trump. Like, everybody saw the clip the other day of Trump being asked, like, America's scared. What do you have to say with him? Say about him. Well, I say you're a nasty reporter. What? No, man. You had the opportunity to hit a home run and say, I care about people, and he wouldn't do that. Whereas Dana White, listen, coronavirus is serious. I mean, we wouldn't be self-quarantined if it wasn't for that. And if for some people, you know, people are talking about they're scared of, like, martial law, right? Not Marshall Mathers law, because people are spelling it wrong. but people are scared about martial law. But you might have to instate martial law because you have idiots in the Florida Beach or idiots in California, like, just grouping together, right? It's a pandemic. It's real. And for Dana White to call MMA media wimps, it's ridiculous. Because I guarantee you there's a few guys in MMA media that probably would give Dana the hands. So relax. You know, it's not everybody who's a reporter doesn't know how to fight. Maybe they don't know how to MMA fight. Maybe they don't know the ins and outs of mixed martial arts, even though some do. Some do get on the mats regularly. But come on, man. Wimps because people care about other people's well-being? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't get it. Again, it's not like the fans or the media are what's stopping this from happening. It's the coronavirus. Like, it's out of everyone's control. There's no need to blame anyone. But he feels like he has to. And maybe it's just to stay in the news cycle, right? Maybe it's just to have something to say.
No, I think this is how Dana really believes. I really think he believes that MMA media are wimps. Like, he doesn't like Ariel Helwani. That's obvious. And I know he lost a lot of respect, quote unquote, for Ariel because he cried that day on the Ariel Helwani show after he got banned for leaking the Brock Lesnar news before it happened. Because he got mad because he cried. I think Dana tries to be that alpha male, like the locker room talk or grabbing by the pussy. I think that's why Dana and Trump are they're like really good friends. That's how they think.
It's like the Kanye line. This why me and Dame cool, we assholes.
Yeah, but I'm saying I think they
have that in common.
I'll say it like this. I would, if there was a Me Too movement for Dana White that said Dana White was harassing women, I wouldn't be surprised. It wouldn't be the one of those things where I would be like shocked at all.
Yeah, no, he's definitely of a bro mentality. I mean, let's be real. The sport is a bro sport, right?
Well, I mean,
he's just that old school MMA mentality. It has gone bigger. It has become, I don't want to say mainstream, but it's become a corporate sport. It's become bigger than they've ever imagined it to be. But his mindset is still that original MMA mindset.
Well, like, he didn't want women in MMA. Yeah. Like, let's be clear about this. This wasn't Dana's idea ever. His hand was forced by Ronda Rousey. He never wanted women in MMA. Now you look at him now, and he says it all the time. I didn't want women in MMA. Yeah, because you're a macho pig, dude. You're a bro. Like, you're sexist. It's true. Yes.
He hasn't walked back on that at all.
No, but that's my point. So he calls MMA media. It's not because he wants to be in the news cycle. This is how he really thinks. Like his boy Trump. They're the same guy. And Vince McMahon, too.
Like, you want to throw them all in
there.
Dude,
I got to throw Vince in there. Like, Vince was going Google and Gaga over kittens and Hooters and all this other stuff. Yep. His hand was forced on women's wrestling. Like, he was not interested. Triple H had NXT women, you know, doing their thing. And then they got called to the main roster. And then it was like, give divas a chance. They were divas. They were divas. Yep. They weren't wrestlers. Vince, Donald Trump, and Dana White are the same guy. Just they cut them into thirds and they duplicated them. Ended up being bald. One ended up having this crazy hair. And one ended up being orange. They're the same guy.
Yeah. To be fair, two are bald, one bought hair. But yeah, sure, that's fine. That's fine. But yeah, no, they are like the same similar style of thinking. So it shouldn't surprise us. We'll see. I mean, Dana has three and a half weeks to try to pull something off to have Khabib and Tony in the same ring. Same octagon. I don't think it happens. I think he has to cancel it again. And I think the fight is forever doomed.
I mean, like,
for the first time, they're both healthy. They did everything right. I think it's doomed.
It's,
how do you even put on the undercard? Do you just have this one fight?
I don't know. I don't know what you do. But I think, like, even though Khabib says he's on board, and I know why Khabib's on board, because Ramadan's coming up and he can't fight after that. But the whole issue here is, like, just rebook this shit, because we don't know how long this is going to last. Stop trying. Like, why are you trying?
But it'd be the fifth time this fight is rebooked, so that's I'm assuming that's why he's pushing so hard.
But you, and come on, man! Like, there's nothing.
Do you? But
what can you do?
But then he sees his buddy, old pal Vince McMahon, still putting on shows. AEW Pro Wrestling still putting on shows. And he looks and he says, "Why can't we?"
Because you're.
And like, how dare he take second fiddle?
Those guys, listen, man. They're not mandated by a state athletic commission. You are. Like. Yeah. The PC is WWE's. They can do shit at their center because it's pro wrestling. Even though it's ill-advised and I advise against it, I don't think it's the smartest thing in the world to do. Same with AEW. Oh. But they can do stuff on their sets. You have actual fights where you need judges, you need commissions, you need cutmen, you need camps. Wrestlers don't have training camp. They do rehearsals. Nope. But they don't have 8 weeks camp where they have to make weight. They don't have to do any of that. These guys do in the UFC, so... Why are you really pushing this hard? Yeah, you're right. There is no undercard. Because these guys can't actively train. And then when they lose, they'll have to make an excuse. Well, I didn't get a chance to train properly. Why do you even want to do that? Just wait. Book the shit later.
Yeah. Like, honestly, in the end, most... Listen, my company, I can say, is taking a bigger... Maybe not a bigger hit, but taking the hit as much as the UFC. And that is ESPN. Because the check's clear. Right? Like, the UFC is not without zero income. This is why they signed that deal. The check's clear. So if you got to take 2 months off, you're not paying talent. Maybe you just break even if you're Dana White. He wants to do more than that. It's, for some people, enough is never enough.
No. And to have the opportunity to be, like, the number one trending topic, no matter what the cost. Because this is when you start to recognize where fighters are not really fighters. They're pawns. And, like, with the WWE, like, Vince is willing to put everybody there at risk for WrestleMania. Like, everybody. Because, let's just be honest, somebody in that locker room hasn't. They have to. Somebody has.
Yeah, I mean, just the numbers say it, right? Like, yeah,
they have to. They're not being tested properly. So, with Dana White, like, the number one thing he was excited about was that UFC Brasilia was the number one trending topic. Yeah, because there was nothing else going on. But what does that really mean? What does that really mean? Is it worth it? Is it worth putting those guys and girls at risk to be the number one trending topic? Because you're fighting in an empty arena. You're not fighting on pay-per-view. There is no real financial benefit. This is like braggadocio. Like, same with WrestleMania. You're not selling tickets to this shit. You're doing this to be the number one trending topic. That's it.
What's it worth? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's... Pride, just to say you did it, you own the sports world for a certain period of time, I guess.
It doesn't make sense, man.
I don't know.
It's wholly unnecessary. Like, if you paid the fighters to not fight, because, like, listen, we got an interview coming up with Scott Coker that we did, and Scott explained why he paid the fighters. He's not willing to put those guys at risk. He just doesn't see it's obviously Bellator is a smaller promotion and doesn't get the eyeballs, but what's the point? Send them home. Let everybody get better. Like, the worst thing you want to be, and Dana says, he's like, you know, our safety precautions are fantastic and nobody's ever died. Okay, but you don't want to have the first to be on your watch, right? You don't want the first UFC fighter to die of coronavirus.
No, God, no.
Like, don't be an idiot just to prove a point. They're stubborn. And that's what they do.
Yeah. All bad. That's our show for today. It's been a hell of a show. We're going to come back later in the week with more episodes. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. Please stay safe. Social distancing is best. It's, again, like we said last show, it's not permanent. Make sure we settle in, relax, make sure keep everyone safe for this small time being. Keep yourself active inside if you can. Make sure your mind is straight. Make sure you guys are killing the time productively. Go out there and do what you've always wanted to do. Make sure this time is a productive time. And listen to us. So follow us on social media at Corner Podcast _ me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale. Shout out to all the sponsors. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network. We'll be back later in the week. For now, though, we're out.
Peace.